This video is freemium, so head to lotuseaters.com for the full video.
Hello and welcome to a premium podcast of the Lotus Eaters. Today we will be discussing human augmentation technology. We covered this briefly for a weekend segment at the start of the year, but there is so much more to the Ministry of Defence's human augmentation project, and Josh and I decided that we should cover it in full. What we are about to describe may seem utopian or dystopian, science fiction or even science fantasy, but the writers assure us that this tech is coming. This is the world we will be living in 30 years' time. Will this reinvent the human condition and allow a new age of peace and prosperity, or is the road to hell paved with good inventions? Let's step into the future and find out. I'm joined by Josh, who is particularly interested in the potential of human augmentation technology for improving sexual function. For many reasons, some of them personal, I'm sure. Is that right?
Obviously, I've specialised in psychology, and lots of these are talking about interfacing with the brain, changing emotions, all sorts of things that are somewhat in my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. Although, to be honest, it sounds a little bit sinister in my view. Mm-hmm. Although, considering the technology in and of itself is pretty cool. I'm not going to deny that either.
Yeah, it's kind of an ongoing battle between sinister and cool. So we'll move on to the first presentation that they have, which is the human body as a tech platform. Modern militaries are less and less concerned with individual soldiers and more concerned with weapons and weapons platforms. Gone are the heroic days of medieval combat. The mightiest soldier can be cut down with a bullet from an M16. The man with the M16 can in turn be blown to smithereens by artillery that he can't even see, and that artillery can be blown up by planes or missiles from halfway around the world. This summary of modern warfare, I think, explains quite briefly the shift to a war of weapons platforms. Drones, planes, ships, tanks, etc. I think that's fairly logical. So this report, which we're looking at, really asks the question, what if the functionality of weapons platforms could be brought into the individual soldier by means of cybernetic implants or gene editing? What if bionic augmentation enabled the flexibility and pluripotence of a human mind to be seamlessly integrated with the destructive power of a fighter jet? I think we actually have a leaked clip from the MOD presentation right here.
All I want to do is to create the perfect genetic soldier. Not for power, not for evil, but for good. Carlos Blanca will be the first of many. They shall march out of my laboratory and sweep away every adversary, every creed, every nation, until the very planet is in the loving grip of the Pax Bisonica.
So science fiction has already answered this question many times over. Warhammer 40k fans will be familiar with the massively augmented space marines, but we're moving to a world where the technology to do this is readily available. So just to recap, this report frames the human body as a platform angle by breaking the body down into physical performance, psychological performance, and social performance. And it seems to me they place an undue focus on psychological performance. What did you think?
I was under the impression that because the physical performance standards are more easily testable and the psychological standards, other than, of course, simply passing the physical training, are harder to measure. They want to have things in place that ensure the same level of guarantee in psychological capability that they find in physical capability, because they have all of these physical tests for soldiers that are incredibly difficult a lot of the time, whereas it's more difficult to test someone psychologically. Mm. Like, how can you really tell whether someone holds their nerve in a firefight, whether they're going to go out and rescue one of their friends who has been shot in the leg, say, risking their own life in the process? How can you actually guarantee that this is something that they're going to do and maximize their potential as a soldier? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is addressing a potential shortcoming of soldiers, however you want to spin it, I suppose.
And that's exactly the problem, I believe, which started Daniel Kahneman's career when he was in the Israeli military. recruiting soldiers and trying to find the best officers from them with psychological tests. And what they often found was that those who did best on the tests that they set for them were not the best actually for the job. It was a case of regression to the mean in some cases, or various other problems that you had to grapple with. So it's a, and that was back, I think, in the 60s, maybe.
60s, 70s, I think.
So this is a problem which military psychologists have been grappling with for a long time. Now, there's quite a few technologies to talk about in this report, and honestly, this should be pretty good inspiration for anyone interested in writing sci-fi. We're going to start with the immensely controversial genetic engineering, then touch on sensory augmentation, then psychological augmentation and brain-machine interfaces. We will then discuss physical augmentation, such as exoskeletons, health and medicine applications, and, of course, ethics. We'll then wrap up by discussing the timeline of technology adoption proposed in this report and compare it to our best guesses. So, without further ado, let's edit some genes.
All right.
So they quite optimistically titled this segment Omnipotent Technologies, which isn't sinister at all.
If you weren't, it is worth pointing out here that this Ministry of Defense report was done in collaboration with the Germans.
The Bundeswehr, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when you got the Germans on genetics, I feel like you're in questionable territory, really.
Yeah, that's a very good point. As they put it here, genetic technologies could have application in all areas of human augmentation. For this reason, we have classified it and other technologies with a similarly broad scope of application as an omnipotent technology. In other words, it can potentially do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, we'll just let that sink in for a moment as I'm running through the possibilities in my head.
Well, that means that they're willing to alter any gene, right?
Mm.
As long as it gives you some kind of military advantage, mm-hmm. then it's not beyond considering.
So that could be like a third eye or 12 extra arms or 20 fingers on each hand.
Scales.
Yeah.
Skin. I don't know.
Gills.
Mm.
Wow.
That might be quite useful, actually.
Yeah, no longer would the Israeli military have to allegedly train dolphins to do its dirty work.
It's funny because I've actually heard about the Chinese already looking at kind of breeding super soldiers and things mm-hmm. of that nature. So it seems like a response to that, that the Chinese are already trying to do similar things, although I would question how successful they're going to be.
Mm. Well, one thing they mention again and again in this report is that most of the actual innovation is coming from the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And China does not really have a very good or very innovative private sector necessarily.
Well, I would even argue that do they really have a private sector at all?
That's also a very good point. They have these sort of quasi-private, quasi-public entities like Huawei, for example, which mm-hmm. have a huge amount of state oversight. Yes, it'll more likely be something like Metaverse or Facebook or Google or Microsoft that comes up.
Oh, yes, that's...
That's reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to go great then, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So let's go for a little primer on genetic engineering. Genetic engineering refers to modification of reproductive cells, germline engineering, or cells in the grown organism, somatic modification. Germline enhancement affects all cells in the organism and the change is heritable, meaning it can be passed on to the next generation. So we're talking about, for example, particular edits, alterations to an embryo such that it will pass on to the offspring of that.
So
individual.
This is really interesting because, mm-hmm. of course, if you say you went into the military and they give you these modifications, well, aren't you creating some kind of soldiering class of people? Because they're going to pass on these alterations onto their offspring.
That's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it?
It is. That's being considered by our government right now. That
wow.
They're going to essentially create some kind of almost like caste system style. Here is our military class of people.
Now, I don't want to jump the gun here because, as we will discuss later in the podcast, a lot of this stuff, particularly germline enhancement, is way off, decades mm-hmm. off. So don't worry, you are safe for now. It's probably the best thing. I don't want people jumping to conclusions based on this, but there is still some spooky stuff in the works. Somatic gene modification, on the other hand, affects only the target cells and the cells descended directly from them, and is thus limited to the individual subjected to the treatment. So this seems much more, well, much less ethically problematic, doesn't mm-hmm. it? Because, okay, you signed up to be a soldier, we're going to change your genes, you agree to it, you get paid, you fight the wars, and your kids don't have scales or gills. Seems less ethically troublesome, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, if the option was that you pass on all of these like mega muscles onto your kids, mm-hmm. surely that's kind of desirable in a way.
It is, but then there is a question which comes here, which is who actually owns the intellectual property for these gene modifications?
Yeah, of course.
Because it's entirely possible that you have, I don't know, a Pfizer Pfizer-Gills gene modification, and all of a sudden you have to pay a license fee for that. What happens if you don't pay the license? And do your children have to pay as well? You know, there's a lot of actually extremely troublesome economic ramifications to this kind of technology, particularly when you get involved with copyright and intellectual property.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, especially when you get to things like brain-computer interfaces, and say you're even replacing a biological mm-hmm. Thing or sensory, say for example, an eye, you get a bionic eye, which you know, is the domain of science fiction at the minute, but you could have this eye that's clearly superior to your biological eye, mm-hmm. but then say you don't pay your upkeep, your subscription fee, mm-hmm. and then they turn
your
it off.
Vision off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty daunting.
Right. You keep paying your subs or we'll make you blind or deaf or dumb or unable to eat. Your digestive tract will stop working. You can see where the ethical implications come in, right? Mm-hmm. Do you even own yourself at that point? Absolutely not.
Well, especially if you get, you know, either the government or private companies putting, mm-hmm. changing your genes, changing your body parts. Mm-hmm. Well, they at least have a claim to it there, whereas otherwise they didn't, which is kind of a disturbing line of progression.
That's a disturbing line of thought, yeah. Mm. But we're still a way off, as I reiterate. Somatic modification or gene therapy to treat or prevent disease is still experimental, although there have been significant improvements in recent years. Clustered, regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats, commonly known as CRISPR, is a technique for cutting specific DNA sequences. The method is based upon precise manipulation of selected gene sequences by switching off, repairing, or replacing existing genes with genes engineered to produce a desired enhancement. Lessons from using CRISPR has led to swift progress, and in 2019, the technology was used in the treatment of a patient with a deadly genetic disorder. It also won a recent Nobel Prize. So it's some pretty cutting-edge technology. And mm-hmm. This stuff is moving, whether you like it or not. It seems rather relentless, mm-hmm. the progress of this science.
Not to focus too much on the negative side of things, mm-hmm. The CRISPR gene editing software could potentially be useful in basically limiting the scope of diseases and conditions which would otherwise be incurable.
So are we talking things like Down syndrome? And
well, we're getting into the thick of the weeds here a little bit, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Where it could potentially do it, but there have been campaigns, haven't there, where they're like, these scientists don't think I should exist, that sort
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
And there are certainly ethical questions. I'm not... Mm-hmm. I'm going to stick my neck out too far, lest it be lopped off.
So they have a section for each of these. They talk about the potential and the issues of the technology. So they say that based upon what we know today, and if current predictions are correct, genetic modification has by far the greatest potential for human enhancement. I think we agree. According to the United States Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, genetic modification could be used to create super soldiers who, quote, kill without mercy, do not get tired, do not show fear, and behave more like a machine than a human.
That's so, not sinister whatsoever.
No.
Is that a direct quote from the United States?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the most American...
A friend of mine who got a job offer from DARPA described them as the literal scum of the scientific earth. Now, I
high
think
praise
that's a bit
indeed. But there's that a lot quote of bad science out there.
Yeah, but that quote does little to dissuade me from that opinion.
Well, it sounds like an excellent tagline for a 1980s action movie. Mm.
There are, however, concerns regarding the safety of genetic modification, particularly for heritable changes, which are considered far more controversial than using the technique to treat an individual when there are no other options available. To enhance general abilities rather than cure diseases, however, the ability to edit DNA is not enough. It is also necessary to understand the epigenetics, the complex mechanisms that govern how the gene manifests itself in the body. Multiple gene activities and various levels of expression are required for more complex capabilities. Genome editing works well where there are single gene mutations resulting in a defined disease. but have a long way to go for multigenetic disorders. And I believe that, so in popular opinion, there is this idea that you have this gene, therefore you have this trait, whereas mm-hmm. recent research has largely swept away about 90% of those claims. By simply doing tests with more subjects, they've mm-hmm. been able to break the previously perceived links between particular genes and particular traits in many cases.
I know that many clinical psychologists would be willing to put a decent amount of money on the fact that you can have a gene and it's down to environmental pressures whether this gene activates. Mm-hmm. And quite often this is what happens with things like schizophrenia, where someone can be predisposed to having mm-hmm. schizophrenia, but it may not actually manifest because they didn't have the environmental pressure to bring about the disorder.
That's fascinating. Are there examples of like a positive condition as well as a negative condition that you think of?
I know that you can, for example, there are epigenetic changes that can be passed down. So say one of your ancestors went through a famine and mm-hmm. they went through periods of intense hunger. Well, this will alter the genes which are passed on to their later mm-hmm. children, which alters the way in which they take on calories.
Wow, that's quite impressive. That's really cool. Moving on, because we have so much tech to cover, we can't really hang about too much. On genetic testing and selection, the cost of sequencing a genome has reduced, and it has become easier to use the technique to identify predisposition for both undesirable traits, such as certain illnesses, and desirable characteristics, such as muscle density. Genetic testing could be used to screen people for particular tasks, for example, cardiovascular endurance or for propensity to PTSD. It could also be used to identify the best enhancements or other interventions for each individual, as well as identifying their health risks. Interesting. So the idea is to create almost a genetic fingerprint for an applicant, where mm-hmm. simply by viewing the individual's genome, you could, without any sort of more abstract testing, like questionnaires or physical running tests, things like that, you could be able to tell their predisposition towards certain behaviours.
I know, at least in the realm of psychology, this is probably quite a long way off. We've not really got the link between, okay, this gene is linked to this behavior. That's a very long way off. And mm-hmm. I would even question whether there is even a direct link. There's so much noise going on in the mm-hmm. kind of in between each of those stages that it's difficult to have any predictive utility.
Yep. No, absolutely. It does make me suspect, though, knowing scientists, they will persuade themselves that they have certainty in this field long before they actually do.
Yes, I can certainly believe that.
Which, in the field of genetic modification, I find particularly alarming. Genetics could be used to select embryos for intelligence by 2050, they say. While selection during normal in vitro fertilization, IVF, is unlikely to have a significant effect, if a process of in vitro iteration, where multiple generations are generated and selected, is used, this could lead to radically more intelligent people emerging.
Although that on the surface sounds really good.
Yeah.
It also sounds
sinister.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, how do you?
I'm somewhat taken aback.
Yeah, me too.
But to just refresh on something a bit more positive, the previous thing, looking at people's supposed genetic predispositions and things like that, mm-hmm. It can be regarded as something quite good in a way, because it shows the biological limits in which they're it's possible to put them through certain things, and particularly in the military. Mm-hmm. You don't want to push someone beyond a limit and then they get hurt. Mm-hmm. So from an ethics perspective, that could actually be something that is actually more ethical than currently, which is, I'm pointing that out particularly because that's not going to be a running theme throughout this document, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. They do sort of skate around the ethics, but they do mention it. So whether this actually happens is dependent on many unknowns, they continue, including acceptance of the technique and technical feasibility. For example, gaining sufficiently large training data sets of genetics and how intelligence is manifest. So I'm getting the impression this is written by someone more on the sort of machine learning, big data side of things, where there is this sort of slightly religious belief that anything is possible with a data set that's good enough and large enough. Interesting. And in potential, they say that whilst genetic testing and selection could play a major role in human enhancement, it is dependent upon significant increases in our understanding of the roles genes play in human development, and the role that other factors such as environment and nurture play. The fields of statistics and probability will have an important role to play if the potential of genetic testing and selection are to be realized. Legal and ethical issues will also play a crucial part.
No doubt.
No doubt indeed.
And I'm surprised they felt the need to specify that statistics and probability will play an important role, because how else are you going to measure these sorts of things mathematically and reliably?
Mm.
I mean, that goes without saying, but okay. I'm being a pedant now, which isn't...
Well, you have a particular attachment to your statistics as well, which is...
I do, yeah, that's true.
So that just about wraps up our discussion of gene editing, and so now we move on to slightly less sinister stuff, but only slightly. But this is my favourite section now, sensory augmentation. If you could have a sensory augmentation, what do you think it would be?
That's a good question. I don't know.
So I'll run through their definition while you're thinking.
Okay.
Sensory augmentation aims at extending the sensory range or acuity, either by using gadgets or wearables to transduce external information to the human senses, for example, converting infrared light to visible light, or modification of the senses themselves.
Night vision. There we go.
Night vision is pretty cool. Yeah. I'd quite like to see infrared, I think. I think it would give you a whole new perspective on life.
What would the advantage of that be, though? Like, I suppose infrared, isn't that a form of
radiation?
It is radiation?
A form of night vision, in a way. I think actually a lot of night vision stuff uses infrared.
Okay.
I would have to check. I haven't looked into it too much. So John points out that you can see footprints from prey, and eagles can see infrared. So that's another use.
So if we're... When I'm going
flying with my genetically modified wings, I can look down and spot my prey from miles away. That sounds good. So they continue. Gadgets and wearables can be used to transduce external information to the visual, auditory, and tactile senses. Vibrations of low magnitude from distant vehicles can be detected by foot-mounted sensors and translated into vibrations in the shoe. So I think elephants' feet actually do this, which is probably the inspiration. They have extremely sensitive feet, and they can tell if there's another elephant from miles away. Now, I can probably tell if there's another elephant from miles away because they're so heavy, but there we go. But they can tell from the vibrations, apparently.
Like that, you're really underselling their foot sensitivity there.
Yeah. But it's been proven that it's useful socially because they can tell where the herd is, for example.
Imagine they'd probably be able to tell by the footfall which elephant is which as well. Having lived in a shared student house, I can do the same.
That's quite likely. Yeah, so can I. Whenever you live in a house with someone, you can tell who's moving about just by the footfall. It's a given. Natural human thing. So those vibrations can be translated into 3D audio sound that provides a directional cue. Someone's been watching Star Wars. Chemical sensors detecting improvised explosive devices can alert the soldier using any or all of audio, vision, vibration, or even olfactory displays. Navigation can be enhanced by a vibro-tactile belt that always indicates the direction of magnetic north. So they're throwing out ideas here, but this all seems really cool, kind of 007 Q go-go gadget type stuff.
Although having super smell might be a bit rubbish, especially in a war.
Yeah.
It's like... There's a dead corpse over there. That stinks. Oh, horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that soldier on the other side. Oh, they stink. They need to put on some deodorant.
Right, but let's suppose you're, I don't know, tracking someone through a jungle, you could pick up their scent. And you'd know exactly where they go.
Yeah, but it's not like you have just like a switch you can just flick and turn off your sense of smell. You're going to be cursed with
maybe
that forever.
You can.
Well,
no,
that would be quite nice, actually.
Well, for example, this is...
I'd like that for public transport.
This is more about gadgets and wearables. So you could have like an, I don't know, a nose extender. So you just put it on and off as far as where someone is. And also, that means...
traffic cone.
That means you don't have to spend all of that time training a tracker dog to track someone down or detect drugs or whatever it may be. You just put your thing on. Yeah, he's definitely on crack. And off you go. A multimodal approach using more than one type of display type has the advantage that information can be accessed and absorbed by more than one sensory pathway. The brain extracts patterns of meaningful information from the sensory system, and this creates a combined experience of simultaneous stimuli. Simultaneous presentation may decrease mental workload and increase the chance of recognizing important phenomena that would otherwise be missed. With information filtering and enhancement, this has the potential of improving situational awareness while reducing workload and risk of overload.
I think this is a particularly promising area because human senses tend to be really heavily filtered by your attention capacity. So there's lots of examples in psychology of things like inattentional blindness, where something that seems entirely obvious when you're looking for it. The classic example is the experiment of people passing around a basketball. And if you instruct the person to count the basketball passes, they miss someone in a gorilla suit walking through in the middle, beating their chest and walking out. So if you have some kind of means of expanding people's capacity to focus attention on multiple things, then this is a very promising thing, especially for a soldier.
No, I think it is. Another thing it might be useful for is a pilot. So we heard the anecdote from Bo earlier about pilots transitioning from old school fighters, like, say, the Tornado to the F-35, and feeling like they're not actually flying a plane. They're just managing this machine with lots of complicated systems. And it does seem like if you are able to enhance the way that that information presents itself, then it becomes something that's more intuitive and easy to do well, rather than feeling like you're constantly surrounded by Excel spreadsheets. I think that is quite promising. Another approach, they continue, is to transduce what is being sensed into a form that can be interpreted by the human senses. Sensory remapping, turning signals into information, is already in use. Due to the ability of the brain to adapt to new types of information, they say cortical plasticity, a large set of possible inputs may be usable. Methods could include adding new sensors or transducers and connections into the brain, perhaps also in combination with genetic therapy. One example is coating retinal cells with nanoparticles so that light in the infrared spectrum can be seen.
There we go. You're sorted.
Yeah, they've got me sorted. That's great.
Just a quick note on cortical plasticity. I imagine many people don't know what that means, but basically parts of your brain, say you have a deficit in one area. The case study that I looked at when I was at university was that someone had lots of liquid in their brain, basically squashed it down, and certain areas of the brain ceased to function properly. However, other parts of the brain that wouldn't ordinarily deal with those sorts of functions basically took up the mantle. And this is based on that principle of cortical plasticity.
Oh, that's really cool. That's an example. They also mention here augmented reality, which I spent a bit of time working on at university. Augmented reality is a technique for displaying different types of information in the user's field of view. The information is usually projected close to the eye with the help of glasses or helmet visor, but there are experiments to present information in the outside world as a hologram. With augmented reality, this information is presented so that it is geographically correct in real time, and symbology is used to highlight important information. Suggested actions, as determined by built-in artificial intelligence functionality, could aid the users in making decisions. By sharing information from other sources, such as group members, it will be possible to increase battle space awareness. Now, I haven't looked into the direct military applications for this, but the civilian applications seem to be already mature. Like, we could be seeing this technology in the next year or two or five. And one particular application which is promising is, suppose you work at a power plant company, and you have a lot of power stations all over the place, and you have a handful of very expensive, highly trained specialist engineers who know how to fix everything and how everything works. Well, their time is expensive to you, the company. So what you've had to do up to now is, when you have a problem, you have to send them out to some remote power station, and then they have to come all of the way back. And then the next day they go to another power station, they come all the way back. But what you could do this way is that if they've got, say, an augmented reality headset on, you can send some schmuck without any of the degrees down to the venue, and you could have the expert wearing a visor at home talk all of these different people through all of the different procedures, so he can fix all of the problems remotely, and that makes him much faster. It means you don't have to hire more specialists, and it's a considerable improvement in efficiency for the company.
So, yeah, that is quite a good idea, really, isn't it?
But now we move on to your province, which is psychological augmentation.
Well, I can't say I did much augmentation myself, but I know...
Oh, they do include substances in there.
Oh, dear. So, would you like me to read the first part?
And my voice is getting slightly scratchy, so if you wouldn't mind, that would be great.
So, psychological augmentation consists of improvements to cognitive, emotional, motivational, as well as sensory function. Cognitive augmentation aims to improve mental faculties, including memory, attention, alertness, creativity, understanding, decision-making, intelligence, and vigilance. The goal of emotional augmentation is to increase well-being and control over emotional states, while motivational augmentation works towards drive and focus. Psychological augmentation is historically and commonly associated with various types of substances and therapies. Emerging technologies in this area include brain interfaces, neurostimulation, and sensory modification.
Yeah, so for me, this seems to go way beyond the remit of what I would understand psychology to be involved in, which is probably more my naivety than...
Yeah, these all sound very much like things that I have studied, to be honest.
But the idea that... So this is psychological engineering.
If you enjoyed this freemium preview, you can watch the full video at lotuseaters.com or click the link in the description.